On today's episode of Higher Learning, we're joined by Lorna Hernandez, the VP of HR with Rico Latin America. Lorna has grown her career in the HR space and has so much knowledge around diversity, equity, inclusion, how you put in DEI strategy for multiple countries in Latin America, and women empowerment in the workplace. Lorna has so many great insights to share. I can't wait for you to listen to the episode. Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid, and today we have a very special guest, somebody that I've known for close to a decade and finally has come on the podcast. Very excited to introduce Lorna Hernandez. She's the Vice President of Human Resources for Rico Latin America. Lorna, how are you doing today?
Very good, Oz. Very happy to be here. Very honored. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course. I'm so glad you could come on. There's so much I want to dive into. I want to talk a little bit about Rico Latin America, and I want to understand, first off, if you can give us a little bit about your role, but also tell us what drew you to the organization. What was kind of compelling reason for you to want to join and take on people operations for Rico Latin America?
Absolutely, Oz. Well, my role is I am responsible for human resources for the entire region. So I handled 14 locations, 13 countries in Latin America, and also the office in South Florida, which originally was in Miami-Dade, and now we are located in Broward County. And what draw me to Rico in the first place, it was something that I always remember from my hiring manager back 20 years ago, actually. She told me, if you're interested in working for a company where you can propose, create, innovate, and work with other team members, this is the place for you. And this was because I was coming from I was a recruiter. So I started my career as a recruiter, and I worked in a very structured organization before joining Rico. And I started my career in Rico, Puerto Rico, because I am originally from Puerto Rico, and they were looking for this person expanding their human resources department. So I was able to get that job. And again, that made the deal for me when she said, you can do here a lot. If you're interested in not necessarily administering processes that are already in place, but mostly create new things. And that I actually use that a lot in my interviews now. It's still very relevant to our workplace.
So I love that. So the hiring manager, they gave you a realistic job preview of what you're going to expect, and it fit. And more importantly, it was validated when you took the role, which is so important. So I love that. I'm interested. A lot of people don't understand a lot of times how you have these big multinational US companies and then they have different regional hubs. What is your interaction like with Rico HR US? Like what, are you completely kind of siloed and you're doing your own thing in Latin America? Do they kind of push things down from a global level and then you take those on? How does that interaction work for people who might not understand the dynamic?
Absolutely. So I do report directly to our CEO and president in Rico Latin America, but I've been for years, working very closely and collaborating very closely with Rico North America, the team. Actually, we at some point reported as a region to North America. We currently report to Japan. So, and in Japan, we also have a global human resources team. We have five main regions across the globe. And I am part of that community of human resources executives and professionals. And that we work very closely and collaboratively in human resources.
I love that. Now, most people, I think, when I think of Rico, I think of cameras, right? I think because I think of the advertisements when I was growing up. And I'm just interested, like, obviously, the business is diversified. We're using our iPhone a lot more for photography. What can you tell us what the business is kind of known for now and what kind of the different business units and kind of ways that the company makes money are?
Well, we are currently known as a digital services company. So we offer different solutions for our customers. That goes from equipment in the IT services sphere, for example. So we can handle servers or solutions that are more complex in terms of process automation, for example, or even we have some solutions that are and that have engines in with artificial intelligence. So we are starting seeing that as well for some of our solutions. So we have services. We do manage services for our customers as well in different areas. IT services, again, communication services is a big strategic area for us. Graphics communications. So we do have locally, you know, like the company has evolved. We are known for innovative, for being innovative in the workplace and innovative in doing innovation in the workplace and how people actually do their job and how business handle their working area basically. And we have grown into that, and the organization is actually very successful doing that.
I love that. I love learning new things, and I love learning about how companies work. So I appreciate that insight there. I want to talk about something that I know is really near and dear to your heart. It's a topic that constantly comes up in conversations myself. I was working with a couple different companies last week around talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. How do we build it into the hiring process? How do we be more effective at it? So I'm just interested, you know, from somebody who's been in HR for as long as you have, and has, I'm sure, has a lot of thoughts around this. What does effective diversity, equity, inclusion in a company look like to you in 2024? Because I think what it is now versus what it was maybe 20 years ago might be very different things. I'm interested to know your point of view on what it looks like in a company in today's day and age.
Absolutely. And to be honest, and I want to make this disclaimer, I'm not by any chance an expert in DEI. I have and know very many people that are experts. I don't necessarily consider myself an expert, but someone that is passionate about the topic and that have been carrying the flag for Regal America as part of human resources as well. So, but for me, it's simple. In simple terms, I would say that something that works well in 2024 is to make sure about business objectives, to make sure that you are in touch with your stakeholders. And I am talking about customers and suppliers and employees and the community. You know, the society and investors, board members, all of that, and making sure that you are understanding of the maturity of the business at that point. And I know that, again, I said that it's simple, in simple terms, that's what it works. But honestly, the execution is difficult and not necessarily of something that you can do standardized across the board. But what I think it's very important is to have a strategy that comes from the top. That's the first thing that I think it's very important, and that will make the most impactful results in the organization, and that also making sure that you involve other leaders, employees, make sure that you promote a culture and an environment where people have can share ideas about, you know, the workplace, how to enhance it, how to improve some of your practices, and that I think that that is what works in today's world. Like, there is no way that someone can sit down in an office, closed door, doing a strategy for DEI and roll it out in an organization and be effective at all.
Yeah, it has to be ingrained in the business. It has to be an imperative of the business leaders. And really what the biggest role I think of a diversity office or HR is to show the business value, the business impact of doing this well. So often we get caught in kind of the moral conversation with it, which believe me is a very important conversation and one worth talking about. But the easiest way to communicate in business is always about the business value. And there really is business value. I've always felt that diversity, your employee base, right, should reflect your customer base. And if you have a diverse customer base, then it's super important that you're bringing in all different types of points of view for customer-facing roles, but also non-customer-facing roles, so you can reflect that customer sentiment. And that to me is one of the biggest things that leads to a better business impact, and why that should be at the forefront of the conversation around why diversity, equity, and inclusion is so important. I'm interested, is it more complex? You said you work with 13 different countries. You know, some people just run like United States, right? That's a big remit for them. with 13 different countries. Is there more complexity with that? Does diversity mean something different country to country?
Absolutely, absolutely. And to add a little bit about your prior comment, embedding DEI in business services and business policies is also a very effective way to make sure that people are changing behavior. So changes take long time, but when you embed in your policies and in your practices and in the solutions and products that you sell and that you offer to your customers DEI, that is a way of making sure behaviors are, you know, changed and that people are forced actually to change their behavior for good. And answering your question, 13 countries, definitely. There is, again, not a playbook. When we started talking about DEI for the region, you know, what you hear across the board in general, or at least back then, people were saying like, oh, we are Latinos, you know, like we know each other, we all speak Spanish, but Brazil. And in reality, there was a lot of misconception and a lot of misunderstanding about diversity, equity, and inclusion. We needed to start, you know, from zero, creating that awareness and creating that baseline for people to really understand that even when you speak the same language, it goes beyond. It's not only there are a lot of dimensions around DEI. And that's basically the journey that we've been in the past 8 years in Rico Latin America.
Yeah, I mean, most of the companies I work with and know, Latin America has been an emerging market for the last 10, 15 years, one of the highest growth markets, no matter the industry. And I do think that, especially when you have these US-based companies, that sometimes you can fall into the trap of a Hispanic monoculture, right? Like that everyone's speaking Spanish and that we can talk to, you know, we can message the same way we do in Puerto Rico to Chile, to Uruguay, to Venezuela, because they all speak the same language and it's all, and that's not true at all. There's so much nuance there. And again, I've said this before, but you know, in Europe, we never think of it that way, right? An Italian is very different than a French person than is different than a German person. But there's this idea sometimes of monoculture in Latin America. And since I moved to Florida, especially, I've been very much given like the 180 degree turnaround on what differences culturally and otherwise there are country to country. I've had the benefit of being able to travel in country. I've definitely supported companies that are supporting multiple different countries in Latin America. And there's just so much rich nuance and difference country to country that I think a lot of times hasn't always been looked at that way. And I think it's such an important distinction to make to be able to sell to Latin America, Central America effectively, but also to build real customization and products that really take off and do different things in those areas. You have to be able to do that. Again, your culture has got to, your employee base has to reflect your customer base. And that is definitely true in Latin America as well. I can tell how passionate you are about this. Like, why is DEI so important to you? Like, what role does it play in your life and your work in particular?
I think I have grown this throughout the years based on my own experience. And with the fact that I am a mother of a Gen Z as well, and I have learned actually a lot, and I'm sure that a lot of parents can relate to that as well, especially if they are parents of teenagers or 20s, which is my daughter's age. So I think that that my passion grew from there, you know, again, from my own experience starting in an industry that was mainly dominated by men, which was, you know, when I joined Rico, and seeing, I mean, I started very young, at a very young age, and then moving to the United States, you know, it was a great opportunity for me. But on the other hand, I found myself, you know, with another dimension, which was, you know, I am from Puerto Rico, moving in South Florida, so I needed to find myself actually and my identity and here. So I think that throughout the years that has given me a little bit more of inspiration, basically, and saying and asking myself, how can I make it easier for other people? And I have the job to do that, you know, like in a way. So that's basically why I am so passionate about DEI.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm going to give a really stupid example of inclusion and why it's important. So I grew up in kind of like the halcyon days of Disney movies, right? And so, you know, there was like Cinderella and Snow White, which is fine. And then they had Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. And I liked all these movies. I always went and saw them in the theater. I could sing all the songs when I was a kid. And then I saw Aladdin. And
A
I remember seeing Aladdin and watching that movie and walking out of the theater being like, that is my favorite movie. I was singing the songs. It was just something that felt so personal to me. And I didn't realize why until I thought about it a little bit. And it's like, you know what? I saw myself on the screen. I saw somebody that I wasn't necessarily raised on the streets of Agrabah, but I did feel there was some level of like, I can empathize with this character. This is a character that's finally speaking to me. And it drew a lot of passion out of me. Now, that's such a silly example of 12-year-old Oz and how excited that movie made me. But what it kind of I learned at a very young age is, oh, this stuff actually really matters. Like the fact that I go to a movie or I go to a comedy show or I see presidents or whatever it may be that more reflect my experience and how I grew up, that's very powerful and very motivating. And it can be something that drives you into directions in your career and personally that you might not have otherwise done. And that's when I realized the power of it. And it's such a stupid small example, but I think that I think that's an important thing.
Yeah, so representation matters for sure.
Perfect. So we talked a little bit about, you know, it was Women History Month a couple months ago. I know International Women's Day came up. We saw a lot of LinkedIn posts. We saw a lot of people talking about it. I have three daughters that I'm constantly thinking about their future. In fact, you said you have a 20-year-old. I have a 12-year-old going on 20, so I might offline have to ask you some advice on how to handle some of these different things because this is all new venture for me. But I'm just interested. You mentioned that 8 years ago at Ricoh, you were kind of seeing how things were, specifically from a gender perspective. And that was something that you really wanted to make part of your objective and watching that progress. Tell us what's happened since then, what you did, and like maybe give us some examples of that progress.
Absolutely. So 8 years ago, we saw an opportunity to start dealing actually with DEI. So we had a meeting among the HR community regarding America, and we were questioning, you know, all the DEI and how to approach it for regular America. And really, the opportunity that we saw was to start with women representation in the workplace, which was the most obvious opportunity, not necessarily because we didn't have more, but that one was a very obvious opportunity. So we started working around international, I mean, like women representation, and it all led to International Women's Day eventually. We presented a business case with data, because one of the things that back then, obviously, again, it's been 8 years, almost nine, where we were talking about this, and people had the wrong perception. People were like saying, oh, but we don't have that problem. We have a lot of women in the sales area. We have women in marketing. We have, and at the end of the day, yeah, that was true, but we didn't have a lot of representation, for example, in positions that were more technical or even in leadership positions. And then we know we presented the business case with the data to the leaders, and I was actually part of International Women's Day. This is how I actually started for Ricoh, for Cisco, so another organization. They invited me over. I was very impressed about the opportunity and what they had, and I wanted to really replicate that for our organization. And that's how it all started for us. And we International Women's Day today is one of our signature events for DEI across the globe, not only for Latin America, but we do it for all the other regions. It has tremendous support from worldwide leaders, starting from the CEO as well. And throughout the years, we implemented the DEI policy, council, Diversity Council as well. We expanded the conversation from women to other dimensions of the diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have provided awareness training for our leaders and our employees. And so we have done a lot of initiatives to provide the right environment, not only for women, but for everyone to thrive. Because at this point, yes, we are talking about supporting talent in general. And we want to make sure that every talent, no matter, whether it's a woman or a man or a part of the community, a LGBTQ community, that they find a place in the workplace and that the culture actually promotes that.
I really love that. So listen, I'm a man, right? I believe deeply in what you're talking about. I know you mentioned that men do play a role of advancement of women in the workplace. So I'm asking for my own edifice here. What is it somebody like myself can do that cares about this, but is not necessarily the target market? What can we do to help advance what I agree with is is an important business imperative and something that should be progressed? And then and also what can a early in career talent, women do in the same vein. Like I'm interested on like what you would give as actionable advice for people who want to help this advancement.
Absolutely. I think that men needs to be curious about how women are impacted or what are the challenges that we face in the workplace. We have to ask questions. You have to be curious about that. Make sure that you promote co-responsibility at home and at work as well, and sponsor women. I think it's key for men to, if they see someone, talented and with a lot of potential, to be that voice in the room where you are discussing opportunities for others or for everyone to bring up that diverse key talent that you are seeing that have the potential, and to really stand in front of those of that talent. I think that we need more of that. I found in my career that a lot from men, actually from men and from women both, but from men. And I think that that is something that we still need a lot of work.
Okay. Well, listen, we have a good amount of listeners. I would assume that a lot of them are male. I'm interested. What, tell us something that the average man probably doesn't understand that a woman goes through in the workplace that we can maybe convey right now and give an example of this, and so we can be more empathetic.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. I see still a lot of men asking women in a conference room to take notes or to share, after the meeting. So that's still, and you might think that is, naive, or that is something that is not necessarily a big deal, or that person have done it before. But why do you have to ask the woman in the room to take notes for you? So those are some of the things that I have seen, or interrupting women when they are speaking, or the famous mansplaining, where you are trying to explain a woman what they just explained to you. So that those are some of the things that I've seen still in the workplace, and I think that we need a little bit more awareness. And also, we want women to speak out as well and make sure that you have the relationship with men to really communicate when you feel that the man has disrespected you in any way, or that they are interrupting you in any way. You also need to advocate for yourself.
Yeah. Lorna, great explanation, but I'm going to articulate that a little bit better than you. And no, I'm kidding. That's mansplaining. I'm not doing that. I thought you put that really well. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm being curious. So I'm trying to be as much of an advocate as I can. I'm pretty conscious about this stuff. It's so funny you bring up the note-taking, and Jackie might be able to test this. I'm like maniacal about this. Like what I'll like one of the things I'll do is I'll go to some of our most tenured male employees and say, hey, I need you to take notes. And if I do, for whatever reason, go to a woman in our organization to do that, I'm actually almost a little bit like apologetic and be like, hey, listen, I'm trying to be out in front about this. I'm not asking you to do this for this reason. Here's my thought process. So like just trying to be as transparent and being aware, I think is really what it comes down to. Yeah, it takes a little more mental effort to think through how might this person respond to this? How might they receive this? How can I make sure I get out in front of that? Maybe sometimes I'm doing too much explaining, but I'd rather do that than and have my intent be understood than have it be taken the wrong way. Because I don't think the other side of that is like I never ask one of our female employees to do that, right? I just think that you have to be aware of how it might come across and to be judicious and be fair and be equitable. And sometimes I almost go over the top to prove a point. Like I've been like, hey, VP, can you do me a favor and take notes? Even if I have a full staff of younger, early in career talent or female talent in there, almost to prove the point that this is below nobody, everybody gets the work done. Or I'll take the notes sometimes too. So I love that example. And I would hope that many people listen to that and understand that it's not necessarily that you're doing anything wrong, but you want to be received for your intent. And sometimes thinking out in front can help you do that. And that doesn't necessarily mean it changes the way you make the decision or who you ask, but it can certainly make you seem more empathetic and understanding of how things can come across. And I think anybody who does that and has high empathy, I think is going to be doing at least better work than we're doing. We have a long way to go to get to where we want to go. I know that. But at least that can start to bridge some of the gaps there. So I love that example. Here's what we've got to do though. We've got to talk about hiring because you've done a lot of it through your career. I'm super interested in people who have done a lot of great hiring throughout their career. What are the threads or what are the things that they do that make them different and unique? So we're going to start here. What is a core hiring philosophy of yours? Before you bring somebody on your team, this is kind of a principle that you kind of stick to when you're interviewing.
I share one before, which is, that the fact that the person wants to roll their sleeves in and learn and do things from scratch, that they are not scared about that. And they are not looking for a job more like to oversee something or not to, get their hands dirty too much. That's a great signal for me, regardless of the position that you are going to hold in the organization. And also, someone that can, that it's, again, eager to learn, that their motivation is, their own development in the organization. So I really love people that ask me about, what is the next steps, how I can develop myself, where this is going to take me, next in 2 years, in 3 years. I think that that also speaks higher from the professional, looking to continue grow in the organization in a way. And that really, I really like that about someone when we are, when I am hiring, for example, for my team, I am looking for people that are really driven by growth.
Yeah. So I think I've shown I've been curious by asking questions. I told you I would take notes. So I'm willing to roll up my sleeves. I've been eager to learn to get better. Folks, if by the time you hear this, I have a job at Ricoh Latin America. You know what happened. I'm feeling it out here. I'm interviewing like a stud right now. What's your favorite question to ask in an interview?
Oh, that's a interesting one. Let's see. I like to ask, and this is obviously, I guess, off the script of behavioral interview or questionnaire or questions that I prepare for the position, but I really want to, I really like to ask people what will others say about your leadership style. So if, especially if you are asking for a managerial position or leadership position, because normally when you say, oh, what is your leadership style, or how do you describe yourself as a leader, you're going to say what I want to hear most of the time. But when you ask people, what others think about, or if I would ask Jacqueline, for example, Oz, what is your leadership style, how she perceives you as a leader, that makes people think, like, for at least a minute about their answer, because they're normally are not necessarily thinking about what how they are being perceived, right? Or they are not going to at least be prepared to ask or to have that the answer for you. So I really like to go into that level of question with our prospects, and it's very interesting. And they mostly, the feedback that I get is, oh, that's a very interesting question, because normally people will ask me, what is my evaluation of myself as a leader? And I'm like, yeah, I know what your evaluation is, and probably it's going to be A plus. I want to really know what others are perceiving from you.
So, Lorna, if you listen to this podcast, you know that we like to flip the question back on the interviewee. So I got to ask you, how would your team describe your leadership style?
Oh, I think that they're going to say right away that I'm results oriented and that I am hands-on. So although that I like to give them space for them to do their thing, I am not, I don't consider myself micromanager at all, and I don't necessarily think that they perceive me that way, but I am the type of leader that I will sit down with my team in the most critical moments and start brainstorming with them and start hearing from their ideas and building together and try to understand where those obstacles are, how can I help you to remove those obstacles? And so I make myself very accessible for them in that sense. So that's what I mean when I'm hands-on. But I think that they will say first and foremost, that I am results oriented. Like,
I
let's
love
go
that.
get it. Let's make it happen.
Oh, I know that Jacqueline's been having pending doom ever since you brought up her name. So now we're gonna make her answer. Jacqueline, Jacqueline, answering for myself, but you gotta answer. What, how would you describe my leadership style? You gotta project.
Okay, I'll be as loud as I can. I think you are a servant leader. You don't ask people to do things that you haven't done yourself.
Okay.
I think you're passionate.
Okay.
In a good way, and also sometimes,
It can be a rough patch of that too. Yeah, for sure.
you're passionate. And I think you're a visionary. You have a lot of big ideas, and you also have the project management background to kind of back it up once you have a big idea. All right, here are the steps. We gotta all be on board to go after it.
Oh man, that made me feel so much better than just answering that question myself. And I don't know that I would have said any of those things except maybe the passionate and the razor's edge there.
But I feel disadvantaged because I need to bring someone from my team because Jacqueline was so nice. Like, look at
You know what? Maybe next time we'll set that up. We'll have somebody in the room that can answer that question. That was a great question. I am so glad you shared it, and hopefully that was some good insights there. Thank you, Jackie. I really appreciate that. What about a memorable interview experience? Either maybe one that you were interviewing, or maybe you were interviewing somebody. You don't got to name names, but like, what comes to mind when I ask you about a memorable interview experience?
I and this was and this was back to this was back to my early years in my career and things that really, I mean, if you are into this type of questions, please don't do them at all. I mean, I'm speaking with your audience, Oz. This I was in that stage where I was looking for new opportunities before joining Rego, I was at a very reputable company actually, and I finished while I was in college. I finished a student exchange program, and that person, when I mentioned the university, was very interesting in knowing my social life from that university, because that university had like the party, style type of school reputation, exactly. And I was not interested in sharing my social. I mean, I was interested in talking about my experience and the job and all of that. And the person was continuously going back to the fact that, oh, I heard that college, it's a lot of partying, a lot of, and honest, I was so disappointed about that. I definitely didn't get the job, obviously, but I wasn't interested at all after having that level of conversation, even that I was young and inexperienced. So I think that that was like a rough moment in an interview for me.
Wildly inappropriate. Who knows what this person was thinking of? I had no
Guy.
idea the Universidad de Puerto Rico had that reputation. I've got to say this, and here's my take. I went to the University of Arizona, not Arizona State University. Arizona State University is the one with the party reputation, although U of A has been known to be in that group too. That's not okay to bring up an interview. You can't share stories like that. That's not what it's about. It was a turnoff for you. I'm glad you didn't get that role. And look, you landed at Rico. Because that was a red flag. That was a definite red flag, and you saw it. and you ended up in the best place for your career. So I'm grateful for that. Don't be asking about the social scene or sororities or fraternities in the interview. That's not the appropriate.
Do not.
Do not do it. All right, we're getting lessons here. We're getting all kinds of knowledge. What do you do to give people a candidate experience that's unique, but also kind of realistic about what to expect, what it's like to come work at RICO Latin America or work for you?
In terms of interviewing,
What do you do to create a great candidate experience? Is there anything unique you do?
I am very honest, and I am as direct as possible. So I try not to waste anyone's time, and I also bring up, examples, clear examples of where we are. And I tell you this, Oz, because in the past years, we've been in transformation, right? And digital transformation has been also in our organization. And we are trying to attract, a lot of people with different skill sets, obviously. And in sometimes I do have to be very candid about where we are in that journey. So that happens to me all the time. Like I have to explain clearly, okay, well, we are bringing you on board, or I mean, if you're the person selected, to make sure that we get to that point, and not necessarily we're not there yet. So I try to establish a very candid conversation and explain as much as I can, or as best as I can, to that person, so they can understand the type of environment and challenges that they are going to face or be living in the day to day. I also, if I am, we work hybrid, so I if we are hiring in Weston, for example, well, I'd like to bring people in the office, and so they can see their environment in the office, and we walk around, and I show, because that's part of our policy. So I want to make sure that people also experience firsthand where the workplace is going to be when they are in office, and get to know the people around, and we are very welcoming with everyone in the office. So that's also an experience that people really enjoy.
Yeah. All right. Last hiring question. So do you have any like technology you use while hiring that you love, or that has really like helped you make better decisions? Or is there anything in place, or do you just kind of, write notes and kind of do the standard?
We are not using anything. We do the standard. What we are doing with our population, we just added a different technology actually as an applicant tracking system, and that has embedded the face outside, so the applicant from the outside and also internal, and that has been a tremendous game changer for our organization. That technology, we had an applicant tracking system, but the experience was awful, and so since we upgraded to this one last year actually, we have seen a different change, a lot of people interested. So the visibility internal, especially of our position, has increased a lot. People have access immediately where before
does a better job of kind of marketing the role and the company out to the external base and getting people excited. So it's effectively taking kind of what we know about an applicant tracking system, but making it more of a marketing tool to kind of get more inbound. Application.
They provide information to the hiring managers real time, to the recruiter real time. I mean, we struggled before with that technology, and now we are, I think, that in a really good place, definitely. And we also take a lot of advantage from LinkedIn. So we used a lot that platform to recruit and to get in contact with prospects and employees and ex-employees as well. So it's those two, I would say, that in our organizations are the ones that we are taking the most out of it. And And yes, we've been thinking about adding some other things into place, like some, how we can leverage our artificial intelligence, for example, for recruitment or for free screening or whatever. But we haven't necessarily committed to anything yet.
All right.
So
I might have to follow up with you on that last one. I might know of a company. That is really cool stuff. That's great insight. I do think that recruiting is marketing at the end of the day. And to me, it's always been about how you market out to the community and then how you market that candidate back into your internal hiring manager. So I love to see that these tools are taking more of kind of a CMS focus than we've seen in the past. So I think that's really smart. As for LinkedIn, I mean, I spend so much time on there. They might as well give me stock in the company. In fact, have we gotten LinkedIn as a sponsor yet or no? We got to talk to our people at LinkedIn.
We have.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. And I agree with you. There's a lot of exciting things happening on AI in the hiring space. I'm actually giving a talk at a conference on Saturday about this. And it's something that I'm obviously super invested in as we're building software like that. So I appreciate your answer there. It sounds like there's been some improvements on the technology side, but we still have a ways to go. I just want people to love HR technology. That's kind of my mission. And you got to provide value to do that. You got to create an incredible product and you got to make the experience more valuable for both the candidate and the manager. So that's something we'll keep working on over here, but I appreciate you sharing. All right, let's take this in a little bit of a different direction. What are you working on right now that you're just like so juiced about, you're so excited about?
Well, we put together a pilot in the past year or so, a 4-day work week. And we piloted that for the entire region. We are in the process of understanding the results of our pilot and putting together plans for how to implement this, how to make it happen. So that we are now in that phase. We are very, very excited about it.
I got to ask questions now. This is super relevant. We were talking about 4-day work week earlier today because there was a viral post on that and I was talking about it. So I'm interested. What did you learn? Like, it sounds like people are more productive, but like, in what way? Like, how are you just?
In our case, I think that people found a lot of ways to work differently during that period of time because they wanted the benefit. They wanted to work 4-day work week. They wanted to enjoy that extra day of the week.
So they were just packing more into the other 4 days? Or like, what do you think happened? Or they were like still working on the fifth day? What do you think?
We promoted eight hours a day, 4-day work week. So it's so 32 hours a week instead of just 10 hours, let's say, every day, not necessarily. No, we promoted 8 hours, period, 32 hours a week. And
so what did you find were like the positive results? What came out of it?
So our business wasn't impacted at all. Our financials were really good, actually. We didn't have any impact. Engagements were very high that year. I won't say necessarily, and I will be lying if I tell you, oh, that's because of the pilot. But obviously, at least what we learn is that having the pilot didn't impact negatively the customer nor the business results, neither engagements, which are KPIs that we every year that we track and monitor from a business standpoint. So we everyone was more productive. We found areas, for example, where we didn't have backups, or we found meetings that were not necessarily needed. That or that we had way too many people participating in a meeting where one could do the job for the rest of the team while the rest of the team is doing something else. Or we found as well, or in some areas, managers took the opportunity to develop their first line as well, their direct report into taking a little bit more responsibility, or maybe I don't need to be involved in this, you will be the lead. So we saw a lot of that. I think it's possible, maybe not necessarily in all the functions, depending on the industry that you are, maybe not necessarily in all the industries, but I definitely see that as something that is definitely possible to do.
Okay. Well, I'm super interested to find out your findings on that. If you're open to sharing it, I'd love to look at it and dive in deeper. It sounds like a really Interesting concept. I'm wanting to understand how the productivity manifests, and if it's every function, does it mean anything from a compensation perspective? Like a lot of different things that I'm very interested in that. So please, please, please share that. And it sounds like
Absolutely.
so far
I
the
will.
pilot really well. What about, have you read a good book recently, or is there any good TV show or content you've seen that you want to share?
Well, I was reading recently a book that was written by someone that I know from my network, and actually she was very nice to give a pre before she launched the book, a copy to part of her network. And the book name is Influence Unleashed, and it's about how to create lasting impact through personal branding. And her name is Victoria Pelletier. She's from South Florida, and I'm happy to give her, the credit about the book, because I am almost done. It took me a little more just because of work and time, but it's a great book if you're looking to really work on your personal branding and looking to find ways to have a long impact, and a legacy, in your legacy as a professional, or in the society, or whichever you're looking for. So it's great. I also heard Greenlight audiobook, which was a recommendation last year from one event that we did from someone from Pride Month, actually. And I finished that at some point in 2023 as well. It's an audiobook. It's by Matthew McConaughey. It's really great. His perspective and how he put it together in the book, I think it is a masterpiece. Really good book. And I am going to start
I've read that
now.
book. I love that book. I love
Oh,
him. You wouldn't think that
yes,
he's such a philosopher, but it's a really great book. And everybody I
it
know who's read it has said the same thing. So I love that book. I think it's great.
is. He did really good. Really good job. And he narrates it beautifully, obviously. So I heard that one.
The reviews were, it's all right, all right, all right. Bad. That was a bad joke. Dad jokes all over the place here. Influence. Unleashed by Victoria. What's her last name? Okay. Can you do me
Pelletier.
a favor and let her know that we talked about it? She's got to
I
reshare, and then we got to get her on the pod. We want to learn about personal branding.
Absolutely. I'm sure she will be very honored to be as well.
I love it. All right, last question. What's something that you would give 20-year-old Lorna advice on that you didn't know then, but you know now, or maybe somebody who's early in their career? What's something that you can share that you've learned over the years that we can give back?
Oh, I so many things I would say to little Lorna or to younger Lorna, but I think that I would say probably very simple. It's keep it up. Like, do not stop. Do not just You are in the right track, and whatever you're feeling, whatever you're doubting, it's going to you're going to figure it out. That I would say that.
Keep going. Don't give up.
Keep going.
Great advice. Well, Lorna, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing so much awesome insights with us. Really looking forward to following up on the 4-day work week. So I'm interested to hear there. Interested to hear about all the amazing things that you've got going on with Rico Latin America. I'm just so appreciative of you coming on. Thank you so much.
It's my honor, Oz. Thank you so much for invitation. And yes, looking forward to speaking with you again.
Okay, talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.